a contentious issue that is still festering down at Hamilton City Hall, and frankly, the ramifications of which are felt, or will be felt, actually, right through the community, is this proposal about licensing some of the housel renting properties here in this city. You've heard from both sides of the issue, of course, on this program over the last few weeks. And there's a report that's going to be going to the committee on December the 11th that deals with this. And rather amazingly, anyway, I've had a chance to look at the report. The staff report posted online, you can read this on the City of Hamilton website, by the way, talks about the fact that this new licensing proposal would probably eliminate nearly one-third of rental apartments in converted Hamilton homes and swell the ranks of the homeless. Yet, they're still recommending that they pass this bylaw. Interesting. Paul Martindale is the broker of record with Wink Properties and Realty Incorporated Brokerage, and he joins us on the Bill Kelly Show to talk about this and some of those ramifications. Paul, thanks for the time. It's good to have you on today.
Thanks very much for having me back again, and for sure, don't let me go without advising your listeners about our new three-point media campaign coming out.
We'll get to that in just a couple of minutes. I want to get your reaction to the staff report, first of all. I was kind of surprised. You know, when they start talking about increasing the number of homeless people here and basically putting people out on the street because there aren't going to be units available, yet they turn around in the conclusions and say, you know, we support this.
Well, this will absolutely be the reality, Bill. I see the licensing program as a tool that the city is going to use to, in a way, unilaterally shut down units at will throughout the city or across the city. There has been much speculation about the number of unregistered units throughout the city, and the number is significant. So their licensing program will no doubt displace tenants, and it's much like OPEC. If OPEC cuts back their oil output, guess what's going to happen to the price of fuel at the pumps? It's going to go up. In addition to that, certainly there's going to be a number of people displaced, which we're all very concerned about first and foremost.
Yeah, the idea here, and these are the staff numbers we're looking at, Paul. This is not your speculation at this stage. The staff have done the research on this. And talking about when nearly one-third of these places are going to be obviously nixed. What they don't talk about, though, are the ramifications of what's going to happen to the people that are left. And I'm glad you brought that up, because there is a licensing fee that's going to be involved in this, and it's a fee per unit, not just per house, isn't it?
That's right. And quite honestly, Bill, and
And they're going to expect the owners of these buildings to simply absorb that and not pass it on to the renter.
And the reality of that is, Bill, those costs will absolutely be passed through to residents or tenants that rent any properties in Hamilton. We as a company have actually sent out a memorandum to all of our clients and people that rent in our properties, advising them that, hey, this is the reality of what's going to happen if you're not going to get involved in this. The idea that the city somehow is going to have some type of minimal fee, say of $100 to $500 per house or per landlord, if you will, and them trying to convince us that this will somehow pay for up to potentially 17 new bylaw officers is ridiculous. This will never be cost recoverable. And the only thing that will happen, as anyone knows that runs a business, you can only run things so long at a deficit before the rates go up. And I think that the early type of projections for the lower cost fee will absolutely be increased within a very short period of time. And I think this is a bit of a ruse by the city to try to convince us that a minimal fee will pay for all these new licensing hires.
Paul, let me address a couple of the other things that are in the report. And by the way, these are also some points that have been brought up and emails I've received over the last couple of weeks as we've had this discussion on the program. Because there are people who live in some of these neighborhoods where these rental units and these rental houses are, that have some real concerns, either, you know, real or you know, whatever the case might be. There are those who, first of all, worry about absentee landlords and say, you know, these are people that are from Toronto and other areas that simply buy these things. They make them into multi, rental units, and they don't look after them. There's no upkeep. In other words, they're bad landlords. Is that a problem in this city?
I think, and as I said before, Bill, I think you certainly have a component of bad operators, and my attitude towards this whole thing is we want to get rid of the bad operators without question.
Will this do that?
licensing will not get rid of the bad operators. I think the most clear correlation a colleague mentioned to me yesterday is it's much like the gun registry. All the responsible operators will sign up, and in order to sign up, they'll be financially penalized for doing so, while the bad operators will not sign up, and which are the problem in all this, and they'll continue to exist. So licensing will absolutely not eliminate these type of nefarious operators. The property standards is a big issue, but we certainly have all the tools available right now, and all it takes is a phone call to any of the oversight agencies or the bylaw enforcement department to contend with substandard living conditions, which, you know what, none of us, I don't think that does anyone any good to have these types of properties continue. So my attitude is, if there's a way to do it, we need to get rid of these people. But having said that, it is a very small, in my opinion, representation of the overall property managers or landlords. There's an awful lot of people that put hard work into their properties, maintaining them, etc., and why should those be the ones that are penalized for a licensing fee?
One of the other aspects of this, and I think you discussed this when you were with us a few weeks ago, Paul, is if you have a property standards issue or a noise issue or any number of other issues about how they're having maybe a negative impact in the neighborhood, my impression is, and I spent 9 years on city council, is there bylaws in place to handle all of those problems anyway?
Absolutely, and this is part of my frustration with this whole process. Really, we've been doing this in a manner that really is the polar opposite or the furthest thing away from a democratic process or balanced representation. We've gone from what I think has been deemed, and even the city will recognize this, as a successful proactive enforcement program, which goes and looks for dilapidated properties, substandard conditions, etc., although they have been a little overzealous at times in that regard. But to within the last 4 months, we've gone from a proactive, successful program to now we're drafting, spending substantial time and money and effort and staffing on implementing licensing. So we're wondering who's determined this, because certainly there was, and I can say this confidently, and I've mentioned this to city staff, that there was zero consultation with the largest stakeholders involved, which are the tenants at large, realtors, and landlords.
So you've got this issue, and one of the other aspects of this too, and I just want to make sure that as people, you know, make their conclusions about this and decide just where they want to go on this, that they understand that there are certain other extraneous facts that are involved in this. For instance, and I'll just paint a picture of this, and I know that you and your board members fully understand this. If you file a complaint with somebody, with the city, and say, well, so-and-so hasn't cut their grass and it's now, you know, 2 feet tall, they can't go in there and cut the grass for them. There's about a 30-day period. They can be notified that, you know, we're ordering you to do this, but there's a 30-day grace period, and if they decide to appeal that, by the way, that the landlord, then there's an extension on top of that. So it's not as if the city can go in right away and do something about it, and that simply adds to the frustration. But that's a provincial statute, as I understand it, Paul, and not a whole lot the city can do about that.
As far as the time frame, Bill, I can't claim to be an expert on that, but I believe the time frame on specifically tall weeds and grasses even is much shorter than that. And I believe if it's after a second visit or notification from the city, what they can do is actually put a fee for service on that particular property's tax roll. So largely, I do think they are working with landlords and individual homeowners, because the last city report, which was a bit misleading, identified, I'm going to say, I think it was around 2,200 violations occurred for proactive enforcement, when in fact, under questioning, it was determined that an almost equal balance of that 2,200 violations were single-family homeowners and not just rental properties. So the idea that they brought forward saying this is all rental properties was erroneous, and that we were able to correct their thinking on that after questioning.
Yeah, and I believe there's actually some supportive housing involved in that as well. So statistics, well, there's lies and damn lies, as Mark Twain said. Here's the other element of this, though. And I want you to address this, because this is another thing that has come up consistently in this conversation. These are, by definition, illegal units, the ones that the city is earmarking here, Paul.
Right.
You know, so as soon as you talk about this, and the perception I think a lot of people create in their minds when they hear about this term, an illegal unit, they think, my God, it hasn't passed inspection. It could be a fire hazard. There could be safety issues involved in this. These things are unhealthy. We've got to get rid of them. Why are they not deemed to be legal, and what is the problem with them? And I understand, you know, that there's probably 100 different explanations for 100 different units, but why aren't they under that umbrella of licensed units?
The idea, and I call them unregistered bill because quite often they are fire safe, they are building code compliant, etc. They are not substandard type of units. They've been put into the rental stock and they have been allowed to exist primarily because of the antiquated zoning that we have in the city. I mean, we're going back, I'm guessing here a little bit, we're going back to the 50s or 60s as far as our comprehensive zoning is concerned. And all throughout the last 50 years or so, these particular units have not been either brought forward or registered to be recognized by the city. So there is a negative connotation towards these types of units. But it's not always warranted. To assume, like, we've had a figure of 23,000 unregistered units through the Spectator. This was going back a few months and based on CMHC statistics, etc. Out of those 23,000 units, I mean, we're looking at a lot of them are quite compliant and suitable for people to live in. The problem being the city is trying to tell us as an organization that these people should come forward and register the units. But the problem being, if you don't have the correct zoning on the street or you don't have a good comprehensive new zoning bylaw, which I believe it was due as of January this past year, so we're significantly behind in rolling out a new zoning program. But the problem is these people could come forward today and still have a heck of a time trying to get these units registered or recognized by the city in order to make them, I guess, legal, if you will.
So in other words, if they went forward and said, I never did register this, even though I've done all the stuff and I've got, the work I've had done when I actually had this thing segmented and everything is all above board, the city can simply turn around and say, that's great, you've come forward, but the answer is no.
Exactly.
So clear out.
Exactly, and that's been a huge part of the argument. If they were to make a process, a much more streamlined or easier or more cost-effective process, in order to do that, I feel that probably a lot of the landlords would come forward that have these types of units and gladly register them. Because quite honestly, from a lender's perspective or a financial institution's perspective, they will be able to get better lending terms and conditions if all of their units are fully registered.
And up to snuff. I mean, that's obviously what you want to ensure, is that, you know, these are safe units. You don't want to have something that's going on. You know, there's another element to this, too, and I mentioned I was going to discuss this today, and I got an email from, somebody who wanted to remain anonymous, who I think is a tenant, from the way they've described their situation to me, is that, you know, here they are making this big deal about this, but as this individual said, this is happening in residential areas all over the city anyway, and they not necessarily be rental units. It could be family members. I mean, where there's a changing dynamic that's going on here that's maybe being reflected here, Paul, where more people than maybe we're used to or want to are living in single-family homes these days.
Yes, yes. It's unregistered units is a big issue, Bill, for sure. And I just don't think we're not going to resolve it today. I think it will take certainly significantly more consultation. And I go back to one of my original statements with you that the city to this point in time really has largely ignored the largest stakeholders. And I keep telling them, you know, you have a lot of talent in this industry, and you need to be able to exploit and use that talent so that we can collectively come up with something we can all live with. So,
well, the other voice I have not heard in this debate, and maybe I'm missing something, are the tenants. I don't hear their – I hear angry neighbors.
Yep.
And they have a right, you know, to have their voice heard. I've heard from the city on this. I've heard from your organization and like organizations like this. But I haven't heard from the tenants. And more importantly, I don't think I've heard tenants complaining about this.
What, and I'll go back to...
The only voice I've heard about tenants complaining is saying we're afraid we're going to get booted out.
Right. What we've tried to do, I'm part of another committee at McMaster University, Bill, as well, the President's Advisory Committee on Community Relations, and I just met with MSU and the two off-campus affiliates there, and I said, guys, you really have to look at this long and hard, because if they start shutting down homes and rental properties around McMaster University, which, you know, along with Mohawk, sometimes you have an oversaturation in areas. But generally speaking, you know, McMaster has, in my opinion, and in 17 years of doing this, has very responsible students and people living in neighborhoods. You know, you have the odd party or so. But anyway, the point I'm trying to make is that I've been trying to get them involved. And I believe on December the 11th, which is the next opportunity for Planning Committee, that the MSU will be making a delegation, so a public sort of announcement or speaking towards the planning committee at that point. In addition to that, as I mentioned earlier, we certainly have been trying to get our tenants or clients involved in this fight, you know, basically reiterating what we've been discussing here, that this is going to be an absolute upward movement in cost to rent in Hamilton. And I don't think that people have the money, nor do we support this.
As you mentioned, it goes to committee on the 11th. Let's stay in touch on this, Paul. I appreciate your time this morning.
Absolutely, Bill. And just in closing, just wanted to say that we wanted to promote our three-point campaign for the most part, which is also currently running on CHML. We are encouraging people to sign up to the online petition, show up December the 11th at 1 p.m. at City Hall, and also to speak up. Email all your elected officials and mayor in opposition. So if we don't speak beforehand, Bill, I just wanted to wish you and your listeners certainly a Merry Christmas.
Well, we'll be speaking before Christmas. I'm sure we'll have a discussion either before or right after this meeting on the 11th. Thanks for this, Paul.
And certainly they can go to Hamilton District Apartment Association, or I'm sorry, Hamilton Apartment Association.ca for more details.
Thanks
for your time, Bill.
You betcha.